Welcome to Business Mentorship, Keeping It Real, where we feature entrepreneurs who are passionate about their business and have participated in our guest blog, shareyourstories.online. Today, we'd like to introduce you to Lynn McLaughlin, who is a retired educator enjoying her second act career as an author, a coach, and a podcast host. And Lynn is helping others navigate the complicated world of publishing by helping them share their stories. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today, Trish.
You know, I know that our viewing and listening audience is asking themselves the question, Lynn, how do you find the inspiration to not only write one book, but two?
Interesting. Interesting. Retirement and trying to find out your new why. You know, after 31 years as an educator in various roles, I did that squirrel thing for almost a year. I wish I had hired a coach to help me because it was all there. I just had to dig it out, right? Yeah. And my why is helping people tell stories, just like I did with my first book. And I had a second book there waiting to go. And retirement gave me the time to do it and to do it right. It's amazing when you can tell your stories and they make a difference to other people's lives, as you're doing here on Keeping It Real.
Thank you. Thank you. So I have a question for you, because inquiring minds want to know, how long did it actually take you to write each book? So was it like 3 months or a year or 5 months? How long did it take?
A year. A year from, I shouldn't say the time to write it, a year from the time the keyboard started to type, from the time when we're about to enter the launch. Actually, the book that I'm about to publish next week on the 22nd, actually, it's been 8 months since I handed it over to Freeze and Press in British Columbia, who is a consulting company that's helping me get through this. I call it a hybrid company with levels of expertise. So the whole thing about a year. Yeah.
Wow. And do you write every single day for so many hours per day, or do you only write when you get inspired?
Both. Well, that's interesting, because I do advise every writer to have a goal. And 3 times a week, I force myself to sit down and write. And if I'm not inspired, I'm still taking notes. I also carry my phone with me all the time. And sometimes when I get those ideas, I'll just do a recording. And then when I do sit down to write, it's there for me. Sometimes my ideas are okay. Sometimes it's not so much now.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting how the creative process works, right? So you mentioned just a few seconds ago that you do sit at your computer and type.
Yes.
And now you've given us a great tip. I never even thought of that, actually, is to give yourself a note, like send yourself a recording through your phone. Do you also sit with traditional paper and pen and write?
The only time I use traditional paper and pen is when I'm in the car, or, you know, when I'm just not good with the keyboard, or in the middle of the night, often I will wake up and have what I think at that time is a great idea. And I just do a little scribble on the side on the pad. But as I said, sometimes those ideas aren't so great in daylight.
So tell us a little bit about the content of book number two, because if you can give us a little sneak peek, because of course, book number one, as we all know, you are having an opportunity to share a story from a particular vantage point and perspective about people going through tremendous personal change. So tell us a little bit about book number two, and is it sort of like a continuation of book number one, or is it a totally different storyline?
It is a totally different storyline, and you know, in my last 6 years in education, I was a superintendent responsible for special education. And mental health and special education go hand in hand. I mean, mental health, mental illness. And I was quite taken aback by the number of our students that was growing in my last 5 or 6 years, students who particularly had anxiety, were anxious, or had a formal diagnosis of a mental illness of anxiety. And then it was touching my own life. In my circle of friends, 4 of us, were having our own children were having challenges with their own mental health, and some of them were formally diagnosed with a mental illness. And as parents, we were grappling with that as well. What do we do? How do we support? And you want to save your children. That's what it's all about. Right. And there's a whole bunch of learning that happens as a parent, as a friend, as a colleague, or as the person who's struggling to figure out how their own mind is working. So I needed to tell that story. When I think about the number of people who are grappling, not really knowing their way, parents becoming ill themselves, well, mentally not well, because they're doing everything in their power to save their child. When really, as an adult, Jackson is a 25-year-old. So there's two storylines in this book. You've got June, the mom, who has to move to acceptance and understanding and then realizing she can be there with love and hope and support, but she cannot save Jackson from his own demons and desperation. And then you have Jackson, who is an avoidance, uses external gratification, as many people do, moves to addictions, and towards the end of the book does find his way to start to understand that he had the ability to find a way to figure out how his mind was working and move forward. So two powerful storylines. There's a lot of heartache, but there's a lot of triumph, and it does end with love and hope.
You know, it's a really wonderful thing that you're sharing, Lynn, because I think especially now, you know, I'll use myself as an example. In the last few months, I'm an extrovert like yourself, and I have found it extremely difficult to be by myself, right? To be in this sort of voluntary isolation. We're all in our little bubbles, trying to do the best to ensure that our friends and family are safe. And it's been a real struggle, because sometimes when you spend too much time alone, you know, to your point about the squirreling of your mind, you know, you kind of, next thing you know, you're going down this rabbit hole and you think like, where the heck did that come from? Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that. And so I think that one of the really wonderful things about a book, and I know even though it's written sort of based on your experiences, the characters are fictional. I think that having the ability to sort of tap into Jackson or tap in to the mom and kind of say, you know, you can probably relate to both people, right, in your own life. And so you mentioned that a lot of folks in your network, and mental illness is not something that we really choose to discuss, right? It's still something that's a little bit taboo. And, you know, if we're anxious, we don't really want our friends and family to know, because we don't want them to think we're falling off the rails. But one of the things maybe that you could share with us is a coping mechanism maybe that Dune the mom uses to try to overcome some of those internal struggles that she has while she's trying to deal with Jackson.
Oh, you raised some very good points there, Trish. And for people with anxiety particularly, being cooped up in your home is not a good thing, right? Because that is the comfort zone in many ways. So going out and facing that and taking those baby steps is what it very much keeps people healthy. My own daughter, for example, it's working out at the gym, right? And she's had to find her way around that, but that's what keeps her grounded. Okay, let's go over to June. So June actually gets to the point where she is so distraught that she is constantly looking at her phone. When the phone rings, she's afraid to answer it. She doesn't know what's going to happen on the other end. Does she have to run to be at her son's side? She's up in the nighttime. She's creeping on social media if he hasn't posted. She sends a text to him to ask a question where she doesn't really need an answer. She just needs to see he's okay. So she goes from this place where she is just not well herself. It's affecting her emotionally, physically, and everything. Right. And comes to the realization after a pretty intense episode with a suicide attempt, actually, where they need help. She and her husband need help. She goes through counseling. She goes through meditation. She starts to set boundaries, but it's a very, very long process to get there. But in the end, she is moving on with love and hope as well.
She finds her way. You know, one of the things that you just mentioned that I think is a really wonderful coping mechanism. And I mean, you and I know I'm also a personal trainer. And one of the things that I help people with when I'm coaching them is meditation. And so you raise a really good point about how meditation, and there's all various different forms of meditation, right? Some people are not into the very traditional sort of, you know, cross your legs and put your fingers in and do the Om thing, you know. Sometimes it's a guided meditation, or, you know, sometimes it's just looking at a candle, or it's maybe even just taking that few quiet minutes away from the hustle and bustle of life and just giving ourselves an opportunity to recenter and refocus. So do you provide any of those kind of insights in the book when you're telling the story? Do you kind of give June an opportunity to sort of say, well, here's a great coping mechanism, and you talk her through it?
Absolutely. You walk through it with June. You walk through what she learns in meditation. And it's not just the like you said, the action of sitting and meditating. It's the lessons that are learned about relationships and boundaries and what other people, when people aren't saying something to you, but the nonverbal, what are they telling you? And June is a person who is a control freak, right? So she learns all about this through this whole process and then has to do some reflection on why is she this way. So it's a learning experience for her as well as an individual and as a person. Oh, yes. But you walk through with her and you walk through with Jackson. You walk through, yeah. It's very intense. It's very intense. But I mean, there's three goals to the books. And the top one is, even if mental illness is not touching your life, and 20% of us will have a mental illness in our lifetime. That's in North America, US and Canada, well-grounded in research. We're going to be touched at some point. And to your point earlier, we've got to start talking about this. We absolutely must. And if someone has anxiety, they need to be saying it. They need to be saying it openly. So we accept and we understand. There are still people that say, oh, it's just a cop out. You try living in that world right. with a family member or a friend or a child, and you'll see for certain that it's real.
Yeah, for sure.
It's real.
Now, I would like you to share the title of your book, because I know it's going to be available very soon. And our recording and the podcast, subsequent podcast that will follow up, will be available online for many months to come. So just give us the title of your book before we segue to your three words of advice.
It's called Jackson. And even though they're not subtitles, Demons and Desperation, Love and Hope are both on the cover as well.
Fantastic. Now, at the end of every guest blog, one of the things that we ask folks to do is to provide three words of advice. And your three words of advice are laugh, perspective, and positivity. So tell us a little bit about why you chose those three words.
Well, I'm going to start with perspective. So I guess what I'm thinking is, don't wait until time stops and a brick is thrown at you before you have some perspective on your own life, as I'm a brain tumor survivor. And the day of my diagnosis is when time stopped for me. And I did a lot of soul searching. I'm a different person now. I'm a better person now. I'm a more giving person, a more thoughtful, a more caring person. But I took a lot of things for granted. So it really is about perspective. Don't wait for that time when time stops for you before you actually take a step back and say, what is my real purpose? What is this all about? And reflect and take some perspective, as opposed to saying, you know, what if you were giving a life threatening diagnosis tomorrow? Would anything change for you? I think it might. So think about that now. Yeah. And have a perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
Which,
Well, you know what, Lynn, I think that we've opened the door on a new conversation today. I particularly love the fact that you're giving folks an opportunity to read and expand their sphere of influence with the books that you're publishing, to talk about those sort of real life struggles. And to your point, I do think that at some point in time, whether it's in our personal families or circle of friends, we will come up against someone who's struggling and having their own personal struggles. So I'm sure that the contents in your book will at least give us a new perspective and an opportunity to think outside our own square and come up with some coping mechanisms to help each other. So thank you so much for joining me today. And to our viewing and listening audience, I hope that you really have had an opportunity to get a little insight into the person behind the logo in this edition of Keeping It Real. Thank you very much.
Thank you.